Hello and welcome back to Matt's Trucking Great Podcast. Matt Ireland hosted once again. Just before we start part two of my chat with my good friend Steve Elsie, just a quick word once again to say thank you very much to all of our regular sponsors and all of the people who've donated via Patreon and buymeacoffee.com. It's all really greatly appreciated. So anyway, with no further ado, let's get back to Steve, and I think we're going to pick up talking about some of the bands that he's been on the road with.
We come across bands that, you know, like I said, you wouldn't actually listen to, but Big Country, they were good live.
Right.
I did a great tour with them with one of the drivers is unfortunately dead now, Keith. And at the end of the tour, just before Christmas, we got called in to see the head honcho on Big Country. And, oh, God, what have we done now?
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Oh, no, we're sorry. And I said, job. And he said, no. You've been keeping us entertained, he said, in the pan watching you. And he said, we're just at heightened bets on what you were going to do next. well, you weren't there half the time, isn't it? Otherwise, you'd have found out. But it's a laugh. I mean, you also get this unbelievable crap, like MC Hammer. I just finished the tour because they had a rented truck on MC Hammer, so they... As soon as I finished one job, they sent me up, joined MC Hammer and Barney said, I've got your spotlight. And that was the only night I did the spotlight. I was in hysterics. I was blushing my sides. Yeah, we've tiny little hammers going off along the front of the stage. Did it come at a village? I ran with files. So I called the spotlight. Oh, God, there's some bird with his trousers down by his knees. And, oh, God. So, I mean, that was just so... poor.
Yeah.
And when he ran out of money, he got sued by, he had these groups, all they did was following around with ghetto blasters on their shoulders. And they sued him when he was skint for money. Well, they never used to do anything. They just follow him around and get back and forth.
Flipping heck. I mean, speaking of spotlights, I think my favourite story has got to be Saxon. Can you just recall that story?
I've got a better one. Let me get Saxon. Me and the Avenged, me and Keith, who was a wild card at the best of time, he brought out the best and worst in me.
Yeah.
We were in Lincoln, a place called Lincoln Ritz. Many funny things happened with Saxon. the first one was at Preston Guildhall when the bloke had put up, they wanted explosions and everything. The right. Drummer, I think, had the bombs going off. But the young lad they got, the third man in line, he put the whatever were the wrong way up. So the first thing he did was burnt holes in Preston Guildhall floor. The mods tongue set him up. He set fire. Well, we were unaware the guitar player had a wig until that burst of fire. And so he knocked up a stage, beat in his head, and was somewhere through a towel. And the other guitar player had seen ZZ Top. And he had a buckle on the back of his guitar. ZZ Top had the buckle so they could string the guitar around.
Yeah.
And catch a chord. The guitar would come around clunkily saying, well, what you don't do is nod your head while it's happening this, because otherwise the guitar will come down and fell to you. You fell by his guitar. There's one on fire. There's a boot that was back from life having been laid low by a fender. And the same thing happened. Keith and I looked at each other anyway. Lincoln Ritz, and it was pouring down the rain outside, and the first thing that happened, about five rows back, there was an immaculately beautiful-looking woman in us, everything, and next to her was obviously her date, who looked like an escaped, a poorly dressed gorilla sort of thing, and he's like, you know, typical Saxon fan, like knuckle-dragger, and this woman's look at him, and I've never seen a look of disgust on anybody's face. This is their first date, and he turned into a Saxon show. Anyway, me and Keith were up in the lights in the truss, you know.
Yeah.
And the half of every number ended with the dander clothings. And Keith had come, spot three, and the LD's gone, shut up, spot three. Said, no, I will not shut up. Spot two. Yes, Keith. Are you fed up? I'm getting blown up. I went, fed up. Well, every time it goes off, it just comes out of the roof and we get rat drop and everything else, a dead cable, mouth land on us. I've had enough of this, survive. Spot two and three, out of the game, click, click, and we climb down the ladders past the drummers halfway through their classic 747 going 9 and 9. He says, "Super pointed down out of the room," and we went off to the pub. Did I get crossed? And the book actually said to me, to the old Diddy, who apparently worked for somebody called Finance Authority, "You'll regret this for the rest of your life." I said, "What is that?" He said, "When we get to Europe, you'll miss out on the bit." Mate, it's a wet night in Lincoln Ritz is the peak of the tour, as far as I'm but I mean, we got the first gig in Zurich, the Volks House, and they try to wake us up during the show because they got local speaking spotlights. And you imagine the chaos was going on. But the other story, if you don't mind me telling it,
no,
we did. Dave Cole was there. We did Who Are You in Gladius, just over the big bridge in the Asian side of the bridge in Istanbul.
Right.
And it was a charity thing for the war-torn children of Chechnya.
Yeah.
I had a gunboat, it was right beside the river, and they had a gunboat behind the stage, and everybody had paid like $30,000 for a place at a table.
Yeah.
And Who Are You was very dismissive anyway. They got the wife of the president of Chechnya, came around and started doing this speech in Chechnya, obviously. So they had an interpreter,
mm-hmm.
Another mic, everything he said. But she went on and on and on. And in the end, this someone called Shoggy, she was the wife of some arms dealer who had set it all up. She came out and she tried to explain to the woman, 20 minutes is enough, people are dying of boredom. and because the woman launched at her in Chechen, and the bloke translated goes, "Take your hands off me, you. I'll have them killed. Don't you know who I am?" I mean, we lost it completely. My spotlight went up in the air. And she's going, "Oh, have you killed? Have your whole family killed? Have everybody you're ever met killed? Turn her mic off. Who's mic off?" Got instantly translating, all this abuse was getting thrown at her. Oh, God. He nearly died of a heart attack last month. Had to handle her off the stage with her hurling curses in Chechen. And that was just so bizarre.
Yeah.
That was Istanbul, 3 days off Alicante.
Flipping egg.
3 or 4 days on that, like a day's standard, all totally illegal.
Yeah.
Double guy from. The Greeks wouldn't let us in.
Right.
You go to that border. It's like if you're going to Patras or Ignamitsa, you're meant to go down that little town on the sea and clear there. They will actually clear the border. And we didn't have time. So what I had done was taken all the transit papers out of the car now, so only had imports in them.
Right.
Sort of in the end, the book said, "All right, but you must go to the castle of Ignamitsa on the
media."
He wrote transit on top of the white voter, so you like keep screwing them on there. It wouldn't make any difference once you're stamped an import voucher.
Yeah.
And away with it. I mean, and of course, left there for all the blues back in. But, that is, like I said, the funny side of it. There we were in the basically only just in Asia, I know by about a mile, but listen to this Chechen woman like hurling abuse in English at this very expensive audience. And Who Are You? Basically, I don't know what I'm doing here. I have more money. I've got more money than all you put together. Why am I here?
did you get to Turkey a lot, or was it not really?
Did the Stones there, which was a mistake. That was the last gig of the tour. But they'd been given a hoot amount of money for a TV show.
Right.
So they moved all the people. There was hardly anybody. It was Galatasaray's old stadium of hell.
Yeah.
And they'd moved everybody, put the camera angle so you couldn't see the stadium was empty apart from all these people they crammed down the front.
Right.
And they'd been given so much money, paid so much money, the show had to go on.
Right.
But that was Marwin Palmer's last job. One of the Euro trucks got stuck around the back streets. We had to get hydraulic jacks and push the trailer across the road using the curb so we could get the ball over. And all the while, my production writer's going, "Oh, where's truck 49? And Martin and Martin signed me, "I have enough of this." And that's, we've done it. But There's a book called, do you remember a book called Rod Wilson? Was he before your time?
He was before my time, but I think he's gone back now as well. Really? I think so.
Everybody else has been backing in because the stuff had to get craned out of the stadium.
Yeah.
You know, and dropped down, and we were looting in the car park. And everybody was doing it nicely, 3-point turn. Rod decided to pull a Huey. His trailer went backwards, hit the security man's breeze block hut, which he demolished. We were both sitting there, knocking breeze blocks and dust, and looking very dazed. Crikey. Like, you've seen Midnight Express. Oh, so crikey. What do I there for? It was a black line, about 30 or 40 I was moving around in, so I'd clear off.
Yeah.
And the man of his work, he laid out like this poor Turk security bloke going, literally bits of grease locks in that his tip. But that was a gig too far. That was.
Yeah.
I don't think I actually went, being brutally honest, I don't think. Yeah, well, with Huey there, obviously, the Stones. That was a horrible border, Captain Andrevo.
From Bulgaria. Yeah.
The mud hole of the charge when they, the organization, the ability of a dead sleuth.
Yes.
I mean, devil take the hindpost sort of thing. Because I'm fairly placid about things, which used to annoy people. I mean, I remember the Russian saying, you'll be here a week. I mean, great.
Okay.
I've got food. And I get paid by the day.
Yeah.
You know, the longer I'm here, the longer I get paid.
Yeah.
thanks to our friend Andre, I mean, a lot of that problem went away later years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, can you remember your first ever trip to Russia then?
Yeah, vaguely. Yeah, we did the Moscow Music Priest Festival.
Yeah.
Which was a bar call in itself. And when I had a bit of a rubber yank. I just remember that. Oh, he tried to tell me, like, that's another one. Fucked off of this. I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, I've done Russia. You've done Russia. You've landed in a big plane at an airport. You're picked up by an English-speaking driver. You're taken to a luxury hotel, and then taken to the venue, then back to the hotel, then back. You've done Russia. Sounds like you've been to Cleveland and you've done America, you know.
Yeah.
And then when we did... And then I thought, well, oh, I've done Moscow, a similar thing, but
yeah.
Because a lot of playtime in Berlin, a lot of cities were closed when they all got opened up later on. Because the first time I went there, of course, it was still the Soviet Union.
Right.
Belarus wasn't wasn't a separate country then.
Yeah.
And then bugger me, I was 6 weeks later, I was back there, I guess. It looked different in 6 weeks. They'd sort of like devalued the ruble or something. And I just remember this poor sod in Minsk, his old security guard. He wanted a 5 Deutschmark to park in a mud hole.
Yeah.
And then I got a vodka instead. And then he took this wig and notes at rubles out of his pocket and he just threw them in the air and watched them blow away.
Yeah.
Because they devalued it by about 100%, about 100 times.
Yeah.
So our savings had gone from being like 10,000. To 100 quid.
Yeah. Flipping heck.
Poor sod, yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose Minsk at the time, because it's still the Soviet Union, Belarus didn't exist.
No. I mean, that was... And the next time, they did the Stones there once or twice. Once, I think. I can't remember. But, I mean, it's just being sensible. I mean, if you're going to... And people I thought were sensible, turn out we're not that sensible. I mean, if you're going to pay a body something dodgy for it to be a nicked, mm-hmm. you don't pull a whole roll of notes out of your pocket, do you?
No, definitely not.
And this chap didn't. But I managed to get the money back off the production. But the first time I went there, you've been to Russia a lot, I know, but before they improved the roads, there used to be a tank on a plinth,
yes.
which is the closest the Germans got to. To Moscow.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're steaming into there and we get nicked. And we demand money at the border, 20 times the official rate.
Yeah.
And I walk up the front and they got their big book and then I'm pointing towards you've committed a protocol, you've committed an offence. And And the bloke goes with it. I said, don't mind. He said, what? I said, he wants 30p. I said, and another thing. I said, have a good look at his speed camera. What do you mean? I said, look at his handheld speed camera. It was a bloody hairdryer with an LED panel glued onto the back. But it was supposed to be some illegal number. I mean, I think he might have had Molyneux in Russian then on the side of it. And I'm going to pick up two of them and say, oh, we'll get one. Oh, what's me? Oh, we've got to sit on time, you know. Oh, that's a big one. That is, that'll be 40p.
Yeah.
And don't give in easily. You know, I have a haggle, but set up offer him an orange and a packet of fags. If that works. An orange and a packet of fags are worth more than what the actual fine is.
Absolutely, yeah. I was going to say, did you actually enjoy going there?
Once you get away from the men in uniform and talk to real people, and I've found wherever I've been, the poorer the people are, the more helpful and kinder they are.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've always found that as well.
I mean, anybody who wants to be in the uniform, you've got to be a bit wary of.
Yeah.
The first time I went into Russia, you can tell who the KGB, the follow-up, the KGB, I can't remember their name. You could tell who he was at the border, because the local guard had been dressed, like I said, in pulp sacks, badly fitting pulp sacks, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's no point giving them any money or any bags. Then you see a bloke who's got, like, his suit has been designed, you know, by an Italian designer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's got his Rolex copy watches and everything.
Yeah.
And I was up the truck and said, do you have a gift for me, mister? And I said, what sort of gift would you like, sir?
Mm-hmm.
Vodka, cigarettes, Marlboro. And they didn't want they want American dollars and Deutsche Mark.
Yeah.
And bones. So he always had a small denomination, like I said, a small denominated notes in one pocket. And then I had a backup if it got serious.
Right.
Which it did once. Getting out of Ukraine, the bloke weren't going to do our paperwork. You couldn't send us back to where we entered the Ukraine, which meant we wouldn't have got to the venue in time.
Right.
So I wanted to go away. I stood there and he looked at me, I looked at him, and I got like fives and tens, dollars in one pocket, bigger ones in the other one. He got up to about $300 and then he cracked. I could see the glint in his $310. And out came the stamp.
Yeah.
Before he just, once he got the $300, he stamped everything he'd get his hands on.
Yeah, the problem mysteriously went away.
When we did Tina Turner in Estonia, we got to the border, 20-odd trucks. We were going to Poland, and we had this gang of security men who looked like extras from Mad Max.
Right.
We were going around. Anyway, we go into the customs, and they go, no, everybody out. You, because I'm the one head driver, you come and leave. So we go into his office with a big pile of carnets. And he said, I stamped your papers, but first we drink. I got his bottle of vodka.
Oh, no.
And neat. And I sat there, and I must have drunk half a bottle of vodka with him. But I got puzzled. And we had every fourth or fifth truck had a bloke in the passenger seat with an AK-47.
Yeah.
And I had old left-hand drive Renault Magnum.
Yes.
I got back into it, and I had to avoid it, but you want to point the barrel the other way as opposed to... I breathed over him because he's suddenly wide, and he's locked in the passenger seat with obviously somebody else who'd had a drink. let's be off then. So I have to say, those folks... They had a couple of very big Mercedes cars. They'd overtake us for, and they'd block every intersection off.
Right.
Yeah, they were all dressed in black with their guns, and they blocked all the way from Estonian border down to the Polish border.
So I did often quite find that customs would struggle because we ran on HA carnets, and because they don't see them very often, they would struggle with them. And we even had, I can't remember what tour it was on, but coming out of Ukraine into Poland, the Poles were far worse, and they end up Googling how to fill out an ATA carnet, even though we were trying to help them and tell them, they just didn't believe us.
The very day we got to the Polish border, and that's when the trouble started.
Yeah.
I mean, they were the most awkward people at that time. And years before, I'd had trouble getting to Hungary because some old boy who'd been around in the 56 when there was a Hungarian uprising, the West promised to come and help Hungary.
Yeah.
But backed off and Rucker threatened them, and the boat wouldn't do him a favour. He said, no, you wait till the morning.
Yeah.
He said, I worked for you.
Yeah.
And my friend said, you wait for me.
Yeah.
Wouldn't, he just wouldn't do anything.
Yeah.
It didn't matter. Oh, but I mean, he's got a long memory. And
yeah.
And these people who live through things, life or death things, I mean, he didn't very often get a chance to get some retribution in. But,
no.
But they certainly did then.
Yeah.
This episode of Matt's Trucking Great Podcast is kindly sponsored by Trans Am Trucking. Based in Suffolk, Trans Am are Europe's leading entertainment relocation specialists, and they're always on the lookout for new drivers. Although left-hand drive and European experience is preferred, it's not essential. What is essential is that you're good at telling a story, getting on with people, and having a laugh. The job will take you the length and breadth of Europe, and sometimes even beyond. For more information and to get your CV in, please head to www.transamtrucking.com.
So when was the last time you drove a truck?
God, that was a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
December the 18th, 2000.
Wow, so 26 years ago.
Around the yard, and I did an illegal drive without a license just to see what all the fuss was about the new lorries once. But
yeah,
like I said, I'm completely unimpressed. But that last, because probably the best lorry I ever had, comfort wise, don't think, I'm not talking about power wise, don't think. I had a food trial, and Paul really backed into it. That's the Halland Stadium, because he was about to move. So Paul, be careful, because they got these blue, big like blue lights outside.
Yeah.
If you can't run like that, you're going to hit it with a trailer. Oh, thanks. Because then immediately reverse, it's retribution. You reverse into the front of my brand new lorry. And I showed in Barcelona. And God, right, everybody, I'm fed up, mother hen. You get loaded, clear off, you know.
Yeah.
And so I, was on my own, and I woke up north of Lyon somewhere, fired the thing up, and 1,200 revs was all that it gave me. It's something. You know, just for Christmas or bollocks. I'm loaded. I got the thing home. I got it to London. Got tipped. Got back to the yard. Dave, I think, once phoned up Volvo's. And they said they'd come and recovered us. Oh, so I just driven back from Lyon, loaded. And they wouldn't come and they wouldn't drive the track in. I knew for a while I'm making money. And apparently when Paul had just glanced the front of my truck, he'd actually put it off the hinges at the front by about 3 inches. And I thought the ECU out or something like that. But, I mean, that truck was an eye-opener because the I had a brand new Magnum before that, and talk about chalk and cheese.
Yeah.
But the Magnum engine was very reliable, but I mean, the air conditioner worked for a week at most.
Yeah.
And I forever stand on screws. But, and I could never find out where they came from. Why didn't the cab collapse? Because I go up in a, you know, nice bare room, and nice, you know,
yeah,
good power. You get up in your bare feet. Ow. Where the hell did that come from? The time that I came from, I kept a box of them in the end. How many more can fall out before I wake up one morning and I'm surrounded by plastic?
Cab panels.
Yeah. The first, I got that brand new Volvo and I went to pick a trailer up, brand new trailer from North Norfolk somewhere. And so I was only halfway there. I suddenly realized, I thought, this truck, the unit rides better than the Magnum did with the trailer on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Different the selling and the gear changes better because it doesn't matter on the gearbox, it's leaking. It's like I've driven DAFs with old crash gearboxes on and they're fine because you've got a very direct linkage.
Yeah.
And you get an Arteco and there's about 14 joints.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like stirring soup.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They've always been a well-built truck, haven't they, Volvo? And they just, you know, there's not been much variation in the layout up until, like, the latest sort of generation. And just a good, solid, reliable truck.
I mean, everything they were communicating now to meet the regulators, isn't it? I mean,
sadly.
I mean, it's laying assist and things, and, you know, and it's bloody dangerous, some of them. And it's bloody, you know, the braking thing. I mean, if it had applied the brakes gently, but if it senses a warning, it's all or nothing, I believe, a lot of them.
Yeah, it is. And I quite often have it in the truck I drive at the moment, because as you'll know, Oakley in Suffolk, where I'm talking about, as you come through there, there's just a gentle curve and there's a car often parks on the pavement there. Well, as I'm approaching it, that my automatic braking picks it up and it will start to try and put my brakes on. So I have to sort of get over into the middle of the road to avoid it.
I mean, yeah. Well, funny enough, when I broke down the car, our car blew up, come back to England months or so back, very kindly, Sandy lent me her newish Subaru Outback, or whatever it was. And the weird thing, same thing with the steering. If it thinks you're not doing something right, it like takes over the steering a bit.
Really?
You're like, you're messing with your steering, and you're not like this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you must not turn off, but it's somebody else's car. I only got it for a few days.
Yeah.
I'm going to start messing around. But I mean, the same now, I just bought an old Mercedes. It's a 2008 Mercedes, but diesel. But I mean, because so many switches, I know for a fact, when that car, if I keep that car 10 years, which I tend to keep things as long as they last.
Absolutely.
I'll still not know what half the thing's doing it. I don't need, I mean, always a complication to me. I pressed the wrong button and, oh, God knows, I did this the other day. I went into this curry house and then they came out and the boot was open, because when I got out, I pressed the wrong key and it was the boot release rather than locking the car. So it was parked on the street with the boot open for 2 hours. I heard, oh man.
Oh dear. So when you came off the road, you went and worked in the yard, didn't you, first? Is that right?
I had a choice, which is doing work, doing, going to something else. What else would I do? I mean, I like doing this.
Yeah.
And I knew it happened about, you know, the inside out about it. Because I had a heart attack in 94, but I got my license back. But they only gave me a license for 5 years.
Right.
And then got to 2000, and they were going to take it off again. And I appealed and I went see the crack and said, well, he said, you would have passed by the old regs, but the new regs, you can't or won't.
Right. Right.
Getting through, which is, I mean, I'm still here, and that's what, 26 years ago.
Yeah.
And so Fran Sam said, well, we need somebody to oversee, you know, the workshop.
Yeah.
And that involved paperwork and stuff, which is not my forte, I must admit, but I didn't like, I did that for 5 or 6, 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
I must admit, it wasn't my, But as I said before, I may have been the worst mechanic in Suffolk, but I knew how to do things. I was just inept at doing them.
Yeah.
But it didn't mean I'd learn them. And this is a true story. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Terry Nash?
Nasher, yeah.
He had that they had a left-hand drive FH12 with that was all every goodie known a man. German,
yeah. That was Martin Minchell's originally, I think.
And that was, they had pretty much everything that Volvo had as a thing on. And that was a lovely motor.
Yeah.
We didn't have a brand new engine. Anyway, that ended up down in Saudi, I think, in the end. Anyway, but it went in, Terry rang up from the Albert Hall and he did Jules Holland all the time. And he says, the truck's on the floor. And I said, well, all right. He said, I'm ticked. All right. So take the unit down and he throw a commercial. So he did. And I got a phone call from that late afternoon. They'd been down there all day and they said, we can't find a problem with it. And I said, Terry, I'll get it. They said, no, Terry said, they'll do 50. And I'm leaving there at, you know, middle at 2 o'clock in the morning from London. Because Terry's old school. I'll get it back to the yard. Don't worry.
Yeah.
I'm at the yard. And there's been in, got to remember, it's been Heathrow commercials. Somebody's been working on for 8 hours. God knows what for. And, I come in and there's the unit, and like thinking, I got into it to move it, and I thought, oh, I couldn't be able to do this. And it ran for a little bit fine, and then boomed up Heathrow commercial. I said, who worked on your lorry? Who is it? And I'm thinking, you know, blah, 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 blah. They said, who worked on it? And they said, what do you want to know? I said, well, sack him. You know what I said? I said, I've fixed it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He said, well, you can't have done it. Well, he called me a liar as well. And then had a stack on it. And all that happened is the stack had collapsed in the middle.
Right.
So you've got a 12-liter, 420 horsepower engine. But exhaust gas can't get out.
Yeah.
But they put it under the cab, and all the exhaust manifold gaskets were blown out.
Right.
That was it. I mean, the fitters took the pipe off, got a gas burner in there, cut them through, put new gaskets on the manifold. Yeah. That sounded great until we got a new stack, and we got a wrecker.
Yeah.
A lovely car. But, I mean, the boat said, well, you know what you can do with your bill, mate.
Yeah.
I know you probably don't look £1,000, like 8 hours in London prices.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But I don't know your experience as a DAP, but a DAP breakdown people were always reasonably good as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whenever I had an issue, they were always pretty quick and on it.
I remember one of the Darren rang up from Moscow. Probably with them X Ryanair, these little.
Oh, the flat-roofed FHs, yeah.
Well, I bought them, some sadist when I bought them. Put Trans Amiga. It goes 3 months in a flat roof, buddy, you know. Anyway, and so I think the Darren talked to Volvo, and the Volvo said, well, we can't get they'll fix it if you can get the truck in. I said, well, if I could, truck would move. I would not have to have it fixed, would I? I mean, it won't start and they won't come out. And anyway, and that was on one phone. And then the mobile rang and it was Darren. And I spoke to Boat Number. I said, I'll tell you what. I said, you're going with your Volvo salesman. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, tell him not to bother calls. Said, what do you mean? I said, Daff had just been out and fixed the Volvo. And it's fine. We don't have a problem. Well, you can cancel the breakdown. Not that you did anything about it. And you can tell the bloke they can open his quilt for those trucks up his arse. Worthless, if you know. I mean, if you can't get the backup,
no.
I tell us, well, if they can get the truck to the workshop, they'll fix it. When the thing won't go, I mean, it's fairly stupid. Isn't
it? Well, it is. Yeah, it's not a lot of good, is it?
But I was in there for 7 years of creating havoc. Mm-hmm. And somebody more sense than me said, we got to keep an eye on him. We need to take him for the offer, so we keep an eye on him. He's preferring and doing things in the afternoon he can be doing. So,
yeah.
I was promoted, so to speak, in the office, and I can't be rude. I mean, Trans Am are good to me. I mean, you will say, you know, good and bad about everything, but I hated being in the office because I'm getting on with people is my forte, and I've gone really well with production manager, manager and crews.
Yeah, and at least in the yard, you're still seeing all the drivers coming in and going out, and a bit of variety.
It's just my opinion. We should never have a separate yard from the office.
Yeah,
you remote from what you're actually doing. You know, what I mean, they're just somebody else's, you know, problem, and then you never, you know. You could work there and never see a truck if you work in the office.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, quite easily.
I mean, now they've got obviously the better place now. They've got over at I. But trying to do it, well, the world's moved on, let's face it. I mean, it's all about daily checks and filling a book every day to say you've made sure the lights work and everything else.
Yeah, very true.
Your ability to fill in a logbook. There's the coppers walking up the side of the train. Well, if I'm a bit shaky, well, I didn't turn the engine off before I filled it in, mate, for you. And your only fear then was the silent check. They take you, you know, your reg number, and then somewhere and said, hang on, you were meant to be in Cardiff, you were back in Edinburgh. I saw that, though.
Yeah.
And a bunch of the two brothers, I won't mention their name, I used to work for them. My 1988, they used to fill logbooks in for the weekend to lose the mileage because there's no way I have done the mileage. But
yeah,
and everybody did it.
Yeah,
I mean, there wasn't the traffic and volume of traffic every day. There wasn't the speed. Well, it's the same speed restrictions, but nobody trucks went certainly on speed limit.
Yeah.
Just my one of the folks who used to work for that Bird's Eye, Unispeed.
Yeah.
Out of Lowestoft. I mean, I met one of their blokes one day, smiling. I said, "What's the matter?" Because he said the union, they're not allowed to route us any other speed than 30 miles an hour average. And he said, "I've got to go empty from Liverpool to Newcastle," he said. And he had one of them marathons, the few marathons they had.
Yeah, not Transcons.
I've just made a lot of money because I'll make such a high average speed on that journey. World changes.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they're the best. You know, when they did a certain job,
yeah,
it was the best. And I'm not sure of many things, but I know it was a damn sight better than it is now.
Yeah.
If you go at M10 near here, then we were taking the miles, and everybody said, well, there'll be an accident, or somebody will crack, you know, somebody's been driven mad by seeing the back of the same trailer for like 100 miles.
Absolutely.
And the person's doing like 2 kilometers slower than he can do.
Yeah.
And the engine cracks.
Yeah.
And gets nabbed.
Yeah.
That's horrendous. Accidents because they all run so close together.
Yeah, I think they just get you just zone out because you're sat there behind somebody. You can't get around them. You just switch off.
And the annoying thing is, like I said, if his speed limit is set like 8 kilometers or 2 kilometers slower than yours, and then of course what weight has he got? How big is he? It's all sort of imponderables, isn't there? You know.
Yeah.
And yeah. Live in a bizarre world where trucks pulling containers that are previously sold have got 700 horsepower.
Yeah.
And they need half that.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why you need a 700 horsepower to pull a box out, really. So,
yeah.
A bill. I mean, it just seems pointless to me.
Mm.
I suppose they're around the drivers a lot of them. Or to attract people who don't want to drive lorries. And the bigger the engines. The engine, the bigger your willy is, I suppose.
I guess so. And, but like I say, just trying to attract drivers and keep them, you've got to offer them something nice and big and comfortable.
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, even, for God's sake, they live in a world where, of course, I'd have to sleep in a lay by, you know, and place to park. I mean, Germany's like that. I mean, it's unless you get parked up by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you've got no chance.
It's so busy in Germany, it's unreal.
It's a transit country, and everybody go anywhere has to go through the place.
Yeah,
people have to come to terms with it. They end up with nobody who wants to drive a truck because it's so unpleasant.
Yeah,
hence why you know the money's gone up, but and rightly so.
Yeah,
it has to go up.
But if you can make a living a much easier way, then people are going to choose it, aren't they?
I mean, like I said, well, I might remember, you know, where we both worked. You get paid 7 days a week, but you can get the same money working for another company for 5 days a week, no?
Yeah,
and have a life as well.
Yeah,
it's like back to the live to work or work to live thing, you know.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't have changed anything because I enjoyed the job.
Oh, yeah, I did. And it was, I'm lucky that I did, like you, I've done it when I was young and careful. You know, I had no sort of commitments at home or anything like that. And it was just brilliant. And it just didn't matter to me how long I was away because I was away doing a job I love and going to places that I want to go. And it was just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you enjoy your job, you never go to work, really, do you?
No, that's it.
You know, that's like, you're looking for, where are we going to go today? And this ride, one of the bits about Trans Am, not knocking all of them, because everybody used to have a go at it, you're not real truck drivers because you haven't got 27 tons of hang meat
to
deliver around the park, right? No, but I could do, but I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you all make a choice about what you want to do in life, don't you? And it's the same with an aversion to anything. A truck that was made in the UK, and I drove one of Matador.
AEC.
This bloke's doing the same job I'm doing.
Yeah,
and he's got fucking keep his legs warm. And he's got a big believer that it was the window. I mean, and why?
Yeah.
You know, go work somewhere where they got a, so when you're actually doing your job, you're, you know, in some form of comfort. And yeah. I get all these old ones and say about, oh, well, young people would obviously be able to drive the old trucks because there wasn't any choice then.
That's it.
Then somebody with a crash gearbox knowing blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, they wouldn't know what to do. Of course they wouldn't know, but they'd learn.
Yeah, that's
but
it.
They don't have to.
No.
And
no.
The fact is, like, for fuel costs and everything, automatic trucks are more economical than manual ones. And,
yeah, yeah. And it almost pains me to say as well, I'd prefer an auto now, just because I think a lot of it is because when they first came out in trucks, they were terrible. They were just they were awful. But the technology has improved so much now that they are just, you know, put it in the D.
Yeah, well, I haven't driven one. I don't know, but the technology, I know, you know, is a similar way that happened with cars, you know.
Yeah.
And I drove an early Merc automatic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not a pleasurable experience.
No.
But technology's come on and it's, like things have changed. The traffic volume is so much larger than maybe it used to be.
Yeah.
And I get the fact that you need a big engine to keep your average speed, but you can't go any faster than the bloke in front of you.
No.
You're going up a hill and the bloke in front of you is doing a speed. It's the same speed you've got to be doing until he gets out of the one.
So yeah.
It's very nice having that extra horsepower, but a lot of the time it's actually frustrating.
Yeah.
If you can't, just, you know, having the difference between 400 and 700 horsepower on the N10 is nothing. The difference is the 400 one is probably doing more to the gallon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. And probably holding you up. But and it's probably earning the same money.
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, the haulage, you know, get under what the haulage rates are, but when I was doing, you know, and you say, why is he doing it for that money?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm not a particularly astute person, but I'm good with numbers.
Yeah.
And when you add into the insurance, the fuel cost to yourself if you're a driver and owner driver, the percentage you're making is so low.
Yeah,
and all you got to do is have a blowout on a tire, and that's a profit for the job, John. You know,
that's it, just like that.
It's and of course, it's the bigger the company, the cheaper they'll do things, don't they? And
that's it. Yeah, because they can split their losses across a bigger fleet, essentially. Yeah,
I heard the Wabaras roaming around endlessly.
Yeah,
completely lost and stuck down low the road, fueling the fleet in the wrong way. You don't forget that now. He doesn't know. I mean, the whole thing has changed out of all recognition.
Yeah.
And so long, I mean, let's just say how old was I? It's 50 years ago since I first drove a truck.
Yeah.
And I only actually ever drove a truck in about 30 years or so, but the changes in that time were enough.
Absolutely.
But the thing is, you always have the choice is yours. You either do something or you don't. I mean, I admire you because you got out of, you know, what could become a rut, you know, working in Grantham. It comes to nothing, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't as though it was hugely profitable work.
Yeah.
I mean, I did all right. I was the lead driver on these mega tours. But if you're not going to work all the time, I try to explain it to the blokes. I try to put people off sometimes. You get some bloke with kids. He said, oh, I really want to come and work for you. I said, yeah. But yeah, you might be 3 months, then you might be 6 weeks without any work.
That's it.
Well, I can't do that. I said, no, you can't. I said, well, I'm not encouraging you to do it, you know.
Yeah.
You've got a regular job and you get paid every week. You average it out over a year. You're not a lot better off at all.
Yeah. I mean, it's changed a bit now because they do a bit of general haulage and containers and things like that. But again, you're just forever away from home. If you're tramping when you're back, you really aren't ever home at all, are you? So,
I mean, the reason why to going back on myself, but the reason I started working with Trans Am was because I was so sick of like doing a day's work and doing another half a day's work. I just went some spotty Herbert to let me get the box off or let me in the top trailers over. And
yeah.
And the I mean, this is just a Perry Masters years and years. I'm obviously flatbed. I went to this place, and the bloke said, "We'll leave you tomorrow morning." I said, 11 o'clock in the morning today. Oh, we'll leave you tomorrow morning. Well, what am I doing? He said, "In pulpit over there." And I said, "Do they run?" He went, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I'll put them on." "Well, you can't do that." "But why not?" "Why not? I'm here."
"Yeah.
You know, you haven't got a fight." "I thought we were fighting." "Oh, well, we don't do it." So they went off for lunch. As they went off for lunch, I put the buggers on.
That's
the gate.
Yeah.
They made me take them up again. But I'll leave you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Steve. Thank you so much for joining me. And we'll speak soon.
All right,
lovely. Thanks a lot, mate. Cheers. Ta-da.
Bye.
Bye.